Annie E. Casey Foundation.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up, another high-level former member of the Church of Scientology has left the church and written an account of what goes on in what critics say is a mind control cult. We'll meet the ex-member in just a moment. Later, we'll open the phone lines to talk about the Kavanaugh nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. But first, one listener comment, this one about the Kavanaugh nomination. Here's what one listener had to say.
This is Teresa in St. Pete. Kavanaugh, women could come out and say that they were raped by Kavanaugh in the last few months, and Republicans are going to put him through because all they care about is taking women, LGBTQ, and minority rights away from us. They want to drag us back to the days when we had no rights and we were pretty much just property. It's what they're doing, not what they're saying, that people need to pay attention to.
Well, there you have a listener comment that came in after yesterday's program. First up today, the Church of Scientology has its spiritual headquarters here in the Bay Area in the heart of downtown Clearwater. The church arrived in secret more than three decades ago and began to quietly buy up some of the most expensive real estate in the center of the city. Scientology is a highly secretive, some call it a brainwashing cult, but Scientology has a public side, including groups called Youth for Human Rights, which has a high-profile campaign to spread its version of human rights, its message of human rights around the world. Now, the former head of Youth for Human Rights has left the church, and the split was not amicable. For years, Michelle LeClaire, former president of Scientology's international humanitarian organization, tried to reconcile her secret sexual orientation with the anti-gay ideology of the church. In her new book, Perfectly Clear, well, Claire offers an insider's perspective on Scientology's secret rituals and its practices for keeping members in line. Michelle LeClaire, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Tell us, how did you first get into the Church of Scientology? How did you become a member?
Well, my mother and I had moved from Oklahoma in the late 80s, and when my mother moved to California with me, she started working at a consulting firm, and it happened to be one of the largest recruiters to the Church of Scientology, and she had no idea. We did not know what Scientology was or L. Ron Hubbard, but slowly she started being conditioned with secularized courses and then asked me to work there during the summer, and I started working there and taking communication courses and things like that, and then they offered me a job, and sadly, I put my college plans on hold and started taking Scientology courses.
How old were you at the time?
I was 17, almost 18 at the time.
So you're just young and not that familiar with the world.
That's true. I mean, that's who they prey on. You know, when you are 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, you are looking for answers, and the Church of Scientology has an answer for everything. You know, how to have a successful relationship, a marriage, how to study. And so you think that you have found a place that you are accepted and part of and learning about life. And what you don't realize is that you are being brainwashed into believing what they want you to believe about life.
We hear a lot about auditing. Were you audited? And what is auditing?
Yes. So auditing is that you are sitting down with what's called an auditor. Their definition is one who listens. And there is something that's kind of like a lie detector. And it registers thought they tell you, which puts an electrical current through these little cans that you hold. You don't feel it. Everything that I have read now talks about that this electrical current that is running through your body that is supposed to be registering thought can actually create an opiate-like state. And so the problem is you are very suggestible. So you think it's a session like you're sitting there with a psychologist and talking about something that bothers you, but they start directing you to where they want you to go. And in the beginning of the sessions, a lot of it has to do with directing you to talking about things with your parents that you feel that they're holding you back, or relationships. And the church's goal is to get you separated from people that might hold you back from coming into the church.
You describe auditing as being somewhat addictive. There's a euphoria that comes after being audited. Describe how it affected you.
So when you're sitting there, it is not just for an hour. It can be 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, or longer sometimes. And you do. You have this feeling of being high. I mean, I've never done drugs before, but from what I hear, you know, when you walk out of session, you feel that you can conquer the world and you have all this extra energy. The problem is that you start craving that feeling. And it is not really that you're helping yourself mentally, because you're being directed to talk about the things they want you to talk about. All your sessions are being recorded, and your auditor usually is making things seem worse than they are. I know now that they're doing that so that they always have something against you.
Meaning that you're confessing things and they know your deepest, darkest secrets?
That's right. And sometimes they take your deepest, darkest secrets into something that may not be your deepest, darkest secrets. They might be getting you to believe that you did something wrong that you didn't, or that a thought turned into a bad action. And, you know, you will find a lot of Scientologists telling you that, you know, I talked about having a feeling for somebody and they turned it into something bad. And in my case, you know, that happened with me, and they were not happy about my sexual orientation or who my eye was geared towards.
One last question about auditing. It costs money. It's not free. This is a central part of the church's teachings, of its practice, and you can only get it, I think, by paying a lot of money. Is that right?
That's right. They start out very small. So they entice people with small little courses at $100 or $150. But as you now get hooked, you are spending tens and thousands of dollars. And it's not just the money that you spend on your coursework or your auditing. You are expected to donate money to them on top of it. And then they have multiple arms of front groups, you know, CCHR, Citizens Commission on Human Rights, Youth for Human Rights, Applied Scholastics, all these different arms that are really just funnels into the Church of Scientology that you're expected to donate towards also.
You donated, you estimate, $5 million to the church during the time that you were in the church. That's an amazing amount of money. How did you afford to spend $5 million on the church?
Well, I was very lucky that I started in the insurance industry at a very young age and ended up building my own agency. And I owned one of the largest woman-owned insurance agencies in the nation, and I dealt with very high-net-worth individuals. So my company was making millions of dollars, and I was donating millions of dollars to the church.
Well, our guest is Michelle LeClaire. Her book is Perfectly Clear, Escaping Scientology and Fighting for the Woman I Love. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. A central part of your book is the fact that you come out as a lesbian. It takes a while, and there's a long story before that. But you came in conflict with the church over the fact that you were gay.
That's right. The Church of Scientology will tell you that they have no stance on relationships and that they had no issue with me being gay. That is an absolute lie. L. Ron Hubbard is very specific in multiple writings, from Dianetics to Science of Survival. And his view is that a gay person falls on a certain very low scale on something called the Chart of Human Evaluation. And when they fall that low on the scale because they are gay, he feels that those people should be taken out of society. And he has a specific quote in Science of Survival that says, dispose of them quietly and without sorrow. So the Church of Scientology cannot take a stance of saying that they do not believe in something that L. Ron Hubbard wrote. So in my situation, I tried to come out gay at 19. I was made to feel horrible about my feelings, and I had to push them down. Sadly, I ended up getting married, was married to an abusive man who used my homosexuality against me, and the church would never step in and protect me from the abuse. Luckily, I finally had the strength to divorce in 2008, and a year later, I ended up meeting a woman who I am with today, and she is the love of my life. But it was very difficult to come out to the church.
Did you think that the church forced you into the heterosexual relationship?
100%. I was made to sit in front of a ethics officer. You know, in the church, they have a whole division that is ethics. You know, people write reports on each other, and you have to sit in front of an ethics officer, and I was made to read L. Ron Hubbard policy and what his views were on gay. And I had to make a choice. I had to make a choice that if I wanted to stay within the church, that I had to be part of the heterosexual group. And there was just a part of me that died inside. I mean, I was very much a shell for many years, but they teach you to be that. They teach you that the most important thing in life is your PR, how much money you're making, how much you're donating to the church. It is not important to them what is love or happiness.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. How important is human emotion or sentimentality or the kind of like range of emotions that we all feel? How important is that range of emotions that most people feel within the Church of Scientology?
Oh, you are taught to be like a robot. You know, they believe that any sort of human emotion and reaction is purely a body thing, or it stems from past pain that you need to address so that you can move forward in life. You can spot a Scientologist from a mile away. They've got those big eyes, wide stare, very little emotion, or very fake emotion. They don't move around a lot. You take a lot of courses that teach you, you know, not to move, to sit very straight, to, you know, communicate in a certain way, and not to react with emotion. If you react with emotion, you are immediately taken in session and asked, what are you withholding from somebody, or what have you done to somebody? So you learn quickly to not react, and that means to not react also in love or in a good way, not just with pain and grief.
You eventually became the head of a group called Youth for Human Rights. What's that?
So Youth for Human Rights was started by a South African woman by the name of Mary Shuttleworth. And she was a teacher, and she wanted to start a group to teach young children the basic 30 human rights that we have. The Church of Scientology thought it was great and ended up supporting the foundation. But their support came with strings attached, and they realized that I became the U.S. president for Youth for Human Rights. Mary Shuttleworth was the international president, and we had a huge amount of contacts that the Church of Scientology wanted. So when we would show up and speak at the UN, or we would speak up at the Women's Legislature, or, you know, the International PTA or school district, our job was to turn over every contact that we made to the human rights director of the Church of Scientology so that they could be in touch with them.
As a way to open the door?
Yeah, it's a way, you know, this is what the church does. They get in through other avenues, and then they either make donations or they act helpful. So that way, if they need something, if there's a bill in Congress, if there's a person leaving their church and they need them investigated, they can pull on those strings. And for them, it is all about what they call safe pointing Scientology. And there is a directive that is written by the Office of Special Affairs on how to safe point Scientology.
We're talking with Michelle LeClaire. Her book is Perfectly Clear. The subtitle is Escaping Scientology and Fighting for the Woman I Love. It's just been published, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. I think a lot of people in Scientology would say, look, the church does a lot of things for humanity. It helps to create a better world, and that's what its various arms do, like Youth for Human Rights, that it's always working to make a better place for humanity. Is there much humanitarian work done by the Church of Scientology?
I didn't see it. The church will say that. Scientologists will say it. But let's really break that down. How many hospitals do they own or donate to? How much money goes to cancer research or to children with disabilities? Sure, they put groups out there like Youth for Human Rights, but what is Youth for Human Rights really doing? Are they saving children in Africa from, you know, armies? Are they building schools in Africa? Are they funding education? No, the only time they did anything like that is when I pushed very hard and said, we're not going to just go out there and hand pamphlets out when a tsunami just hit Sri Lanka. We're going to build schools. And the church actually tried to stop me from doing that. So I went out to different cities and raised funds so that I could build schools in Sri Lanka for these children. So I have not seen where they have done anything that does not benefit them. They own a lot of buildings, and they donate a lot of money to the Police Athletic League. I find it interesting that they're making donations to the police or to any sort of government agency.
You say at one point early on that 12 hours of auditing costs $3,500, the fee. Does any of that money go to the auditors, or does it all go to the church?
It does not go to the auditors. My mother was one of the top executives inside of the church. If you work for the church and you are a church member, you receive $50 a week. And David Miscavige, who is running the church, you know, drives around in his blacked out Mercedes with his bodyguards and has handmade suits and, you know, looks impeccable. But the people who keep the church going are making $50 a week. I can remember with my mother, she didn't even have enough money to get her hair done. And then when I tried to give her a credit card and pay for things, they would not allow me to do that.
How much money do you think the church has? I mean, how rich is the church? Do you have any idea?
Well, I've never seen their books, so I can only tell you what I've heard through the grapevine, through Leah Remini, different people. But I've definitely heard over $1 billion.
Why didn't you leave the church, though? You left later, but for 30 years, there have been stories about what Scientology did to the former mayor of Clearwater. All these parents have come forward saying mm-hmm. their kids were in cults. There have been exposés, lots of documentaries. You came out in 2014, is that right?
No, I left in 2010.
2010, okay. But why don't more members leave the church? Why don't they read? I mean, yours is not the first book, and there have been lots of other exposés about the church, but why do you think more people don't leave?
They don't see them. They don't see the books. They don't see the exposés. You know, especially people that work inside of the Church of Scientology, there is a proxy on the Internet. So number one, they don't have their own phones. And number two, if they Google anything on the Internet that has something that could take them to a site that is anti-Scientology, the proxy on the Internet stops them from going there. Those of us that did not work for the church but were Scientologists, we knew that if we read any of those articles, that we would get pulled in session and we would get in trouble for that. We also were made to believe that the press, as L. Ron Hubbard calls them, was the merchants of chaos. And so nothing that they would put out there would be truth. And we truly believed it. My hope today is that so many people knew me in the Church of Scientology. And when your face is on the cover of People magazine and a church member is walking into a CVS, that's something that they might see. And I'm hoping for something like that. They probably will not believe it, and they probably will not pick it up. but there might just be that one that does.
We're talking with Michelle LeClaire, who formerly head Youth for Human Rights, a part of the Church of Scientology. Michelle, we only have 2 minutes left, but Clearwater is an important part. It's the spiritual headquarters of the Church of Scientology. What do you think the most important thing that Clearwater residents need to know about the church and its existence there in Clearwater? What's the most important thing that people need to know about Clearwater and the church?
There is something that can be done about a cult that has taken over your city and your town. And we just have to be coordinated together as a public, which means getting the word out. Don't let them put money into one of your businesses or in a foundation that you're running so that they can buy you. What they are doing is brainwashing, and they are trying to take over your city. And I think that we need to start raising our children and telling them, walk away from the boogeyman, don't take candy from strangers, and do not ever walk in the door of the Church of Scientology.
What would happen if you did, if you were not a member of the church and you just wanted to get one of their personality tests? What would happen?
Well, they know how to get to you. I mean, look, there are tons of people who have not gone down that path, and I think it's great. But they know the things to say to you. We all have things inside of us that we want to change or make better. But the Church of Scientology does not have the answer. There are plenty of other groups, other religions, psychology, that have answers for you. It is not the Church of Scientology.
Well, Michelle LeClaire, thanks a lot. I wish we had more time because there's so much more to your book I'd like to talk to you about. But the book is perfectly clear. Michelle LeClaire, thank you so much for coming on WMNF.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. We're going to open up the phone lines in just a moment and take your phone calls. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And you can also send in an email to the studio here. dj@wmnf.org. We're going to talk about some of the things in the news, but the big issue that I want to talk about is the Kavanaugh nomination. The AP, though, is reporting that multiple people were killed this morning in a shooting in Northeast Maryland, according to a law enforcement official. The law enforcement official had knowledge of the shooting but wasn't authorized to discuss details. The FBI described it as an active shooter situation and said its Baltimore field office was assisting. It happened in Hartford County. The Hartford County Sheriff's Office tweeted that the shooting involved multiple victims and warned that the situation was still fluid and that people should avoid the area. And in a tweet, Maryland Governor Larry Hogan said his office is monitoring the situation in the town of Aberdeen and that the state stands ready, rather, to offer any support. So we'll hear more about that shooting today of multiple people, several people killed, apparently, in Maryland, Aberdeen, Maryland, this morning. We'll have more on the NPR News at the top of the hour. The big issue in the news, and we heard a lot of discussion about it on from a woman's point of view, Mary and Arlene discussed it, the allegations by a woman named Christine Blasey Ford that said that she was attacked by Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. So there is tremendous pressure on her to appear before the Senate Judiciary Committee on Monday, and I'm wondering, do you think that Christine Ford should testify on Monday? Should there be an FBI investigation first? Ford says that Judge Kavanaugh's friend, Mark Judge, was in the room that night. Should this person, Mark Judge, be required to testify? Kavanaugh is denying being at the party in question. What do you think of Kavanaugh's denial? Should Ford's charges be ignored altogether? If Kavanaugh were to acknowledge the attack and apologize, would that make the issue go away? And should the vote on Kavanaugh's confirmation go ahead next week? That's the question. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. Here's reporter Sagar Magani kind of recapping where we stand on the Kavanaugh nomination.
The GOP-led panel says it'll hold a Monday hearing, and Ford has until tomorrow morning to submit written documents if she plans to be there.
Really, this is an opportunity for Dr. Ford to be heard if she wants to take advantage of it.
Ford wants the FBI to investigate the allegation before she testifies, but John Cornyn and committee Republicans say that won't happen.
The witnesses don't get to control the committee process.
Kirsten Gillibrand and fellow Democrats say the panel's bullying Ford into appearing.
What they are forcing on her right now, I think, is inappropriate.
President Trump says Ford's allegation of the assault is hard to believe. Ford insists the FBI investigate her allegation that Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her before she testifies, which Republicans say will not happen. Her lawyer says the Senate Judiciary Committee's plan to call just Kavanaugh and Ford does not amount to a fair or a good faith investigation, saying multiple witnesses should testify without specifying names. Sagar Magani at the White House.
All right, so my question right now on this part of the show is, should Christine Blasey Ford testify on Monday, or should there be an FBI investigation first before she gives any testimony? Ford says Kavanaugh's friend Mark Judge was in the room that night when they were high school students. Should this guy, Mark Judge, also be required to testify? And when we open the phones, I'd like to give preference to women. I'd like to hear from women because I don't think that we hear enough women's voices on these call-in shows. If you're a woman and you've got ideas or thoughts about this in any direction, please call us up and we'd like to hear from you. The number to call, 813-239-9663. Should Ford's charges be ignored altogether? If Kavanaugh were to acknowledge the attack and apologize, would that make the issue go away? Should the vote on Kavanaugh's confirmation go ahead next week? What do you think? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Can we get some women? I see men are calling in, and that's great. We'll take some men in just a moment, but I'd like to hear from some women. What do you think? Should Ms. Ford testify on Monday? Or should there be an FBI investigation first? Do you think that there's something to Ms. Ford's complaint? What do you think? 813-239-9663. Let's see if we can get some women's voices on here, because I think that is the important place to start. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And you're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. James Lyles is our phone producer today. And James is telling me that we've got men on the line. That's good. Let's see if we can find some women. We've got, I think we've got one open line, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Sabrina, who's in Dunedin. Sabrina, tell us what you think. Hi, Sabrina, can you hear? Sabrina, tell us what you think.
I was hoping I wouldn't be on the radio. It's fine. I think that now that it's out there, it's a he said, she said, I think that it needs to be proven who's right. And if he's really telling the truth, let's raise him up and find out that he's telling the truth and put any suspicion aside. And if he's not, that's a bigger reason to not have him in a big position, because he's not just covering up or having done something like that. He's lying. So I think it's important to get to the bottom of it.
Do you think that there should first be an FBI investigation?
Absolutely.
Before she testifies? What do you make of this deadline that she's got to tell the Senate Judiciary Committee tomorrow whether or not she intends to testify on Monday? What do you think of that deadline?
I think it's a hurry up, good old boys, making her feel pressured. And if this is such a big decision that it should be investigated, and we should find out the truth.
All right. Well, Sabrina, I know you didn't want to be on the air, but thank you so much for being the first one to call in.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. That was great. All right, so we heard Sabrina talk. 813-239-9663. Judge Kavanaugh has been huddling at the White House for 4 days in a row. Frank Rich is reporting. Frank Rich is a former columnist for the New York Times. He's citing a Washington Post report that the White House is conducting what's called a murder board to prepare Kavanaugh for his potential showdown with Ford before the Judiciary Committee. And among the people helping Kavanaugh prepare for his testimony, the showdown testimony next Monday, if it happens, is former Fox News executive Bill Shein, who was there when Roger Ailes was there and Bill O'Reilly was there. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Deborah in Sarasota. Deborah, what do you think? Should Christine Blasey Ford be forced to testify on Monday? Should there be an FBI investigation before she testifies? What do you think of Kavanaugh's denial? Tell us what you think.
Well, I think that ideally she should there should be an FBI investigation before she testifies, but I don't think the Republicans are going to allow that. And so I think her hand is forced. She really needs to show up on Monday and state her case. I think these men in the Senate do not understand the trauma that this woman has gone through. You know, I've been raped personally, and, you know, different circumstances, but, you know, when someone bigger and stronger has their hand over your mouth, you feel like, you know, you don't know if you can breathe, you don't know if you're going to die. This is traumatic beyond belief. And I think she's a very credible witness. She's been through therapy about this issue. She's, you know, had issues with her marriage, obviously, because of this issue. And she needs to state her case. I don't think she has a choice, unfortunately. The Senate is forcing her to show up on Monday, and I hope she does, because otherwise they're just going to vote him in.
Deborah, you went through a traumatic situation. For a woman who has never testified before Congress right now and apparently lives a pretty quiet life, what do you think about her just kind of going into a hearing room in Washington, D.C., where 11 or so members of the Republican Judiciary Committee are going to question her? How do you think she feels?
I think she's terrified, with good reason. But I think, in one sense, it will be cathartic for her to get it out and state her case and have her day, so to speak. You know, the circumstances are not ideal. It really should have a thorough FBI investigation beforehand. That's the right way to go. But let's face it, this is a political issue, and the Republicans are not going to do that. The president is not going to order an FBI investigation, so it just seems like it's just not going to happen unless people take to the streets and demand it, which I don't see any protests being organized. It's a really sad situation, but I think she's just going to have to buck up and go in on Monday. I hope she does. I think that's the only shot we have for getting this, really, to me, in my mind, a monster off, you know, the Supreme Court, potentially.
All right, Deborah, thank you so much. I know that call was hard to make, but thank you very much.
Thanks, Rob.
All right, great to hear from you. All right, here's somebody with an entirely different take. Here's a guy who thinks that what Judge Kavanaugh allegedly did, young Brett Kavanaugh allegedly did, should be dismissed. Here's somebody who was just on TV yesterday saying it really doesn't matter if it's true. We're going to hear from one of the country's top Christian evangelists, Franklin Graham. He was on the CBN network yesterday, and this is what he had to say.
Reverend Graham, you have blogged about the sexual assault allegation against Judge Kavanaugh, saying the confirmation needs to move forward. Do you think the Senate should disregard this accusation?
I don't think you'd disregard it. I think they're going to have to, no question, listen to it. But this accusation, I guess, was with Senator Feinstein weeks ago. So I think they've pulled it out here at the 11th hour for all political purposes. And it's just a shame that a person like Judge Kavanaugh, who has a stellar record, that somebody can bring something up that he did when he was a teenager close to 40 years ago. That's not relevant. We got to look at a person's life and what they've done as an adult, and are they qualified for this position? So this is just an attempt to smear him. They couldn't find anything else in his record. And so this is just an attempt to smear him and just smear his name and put a black dot on it. And I hope the Senate is smarter than this, and they're not going to let this stop the process from moving forward and confirming this man.
Well, that's Franklin Graham, who's one of the top evangelists in the country, said this is something that Kavanaugh did when he was a teenager. It's not relevant. What do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. We're trying to hear from a lot of women today. Let's go to Jackie in Clearwater. Hi, Jackie, you're on. What do you think?
Hey, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. I don't think she should do it because I think it's a totally, she's going to be totally intimidated, and it might even be worse for her than what the actual event was years ago. She's reliving it, and people are threatening her life. And even if she does, and even if there was an FBI investigation, he's still going to get in. Just like the other guy, what was Clarence Thomas?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just like him. He's still going to get in. It doesn't matter.
So the fix is in, and she shouldn't re-traumatize herself because the men on the Senate Judiciary Committee, at least the Republicans, will be out to get her.
Oh, yeah, they're just going to, you know, rip her a new you-know-what, and then she's just going to have to live it all over again and feel humiliated. She already feels that way. And I just say, just let sleeping dogs lie, because he's going to get in, and there's no point in this. I hope whoever has been coaching her understands that, you know, I don't think they're doing her any benefit. I really don't.
All right, thanks, Jackie. Bob. Thank you so much. Thanks for calling in. Thanks. It's great to hear from all these women. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Let's hear from some more women. The questions are, should Christine Blasey Ford testify on Monday before the Senate Judiciary Committee? Should there first be an FBI investigation? Should Judge Kavanaugh's confirmation vote go ahead next week? If Kavanaugh were to acknowledge the attack and apologize, would that make the issue go away? Should Ms. Ford's charges be ignored altogether? What do you think of Kavanaugh's denial? He denies being at the party. Ford says Kavanaugh's friend, Mark Judge, was also in the room that night. Should Judge be required to testify? What do you think? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Deanna, who's in Largo. Hi, Deanna. You're on. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. I'm glad that you're taking a different point of view, because I believe it's been the boys' club for so long. And I read a comment on Facebook, which I would like to share, and I thought was very to the point. So if this goes under the rug, then we're sending a message to our boys today, instead of getting on the bandwagon of the Me Too movement, and that you should treat women with respect at all times. So the message will be, whatever you do at 17, whether you rape, beat, molest, do whatever against the law, as long as you don't get convicted of it, that it's okay. So I think that we should go through with the investigation. I think that they should slow their roll and let it all come, just whatever happened, and I happen to believe her. I happen to know someone in my family who, the person who abused her actually went to prison, and she still did not start counseling for 20 years. So if they only have him and her, and they do not have any professionals to address this particular type of trauma and how some women don't tell until, and I absolutely can relate with her 100%, because this person who went to jail for molesting the friend of mine, if he were to come up into a position, of course, now see, he's on the registry and he couldn't do it. But in the event that the tables were turned and I were to see him to have an opportunity to be in this position, a lifelong position. I heard someone speaking on The View where she had a 3-year position, and they went all the way back and talked to her where she grew up in the projects. So I do not understand why they're in such a hurry, number one. What's wrong with asking these people? So many people have come, because that's something like that happens, there's rumors and there's whispers. And now there's people are saying, yeah, I remember hearing that happen. Yes, I remember hearing that happen. One person, okay. But now there's several people from the school, because, again, we're talking girls' school, boys' school. And as from what I could take it, is some of those girls were under the impression to make sure that they watched out whenever they were around that particular person. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Deanna, thanks a lot. And I think your point about your relative, the trauma really never goes away when you're attacked.
It never goes away. It's with you every day. And the therapist that she went to when the trauma happened actually told her, which I thought was bad advice, but she was the therapist, that you don't have to tell. You don't have to talk. You have to wait till you're ready. So in the event that that they were to seek some specialist in trauma, especially physical trauma, as in molesting and rape, that they would find out that what they're thinking and what their position is not necessarily what the therapist pursue and tell their patients.
Mm-hmm. All right. Deanna, thank you so much. Thanks for coming on.
Okay. No, thank you, Rob, for giving women a platform. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take some more phone calls in just a second, trying to give preference to women today. Again, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford's initial letter says that Brett Kavanaugh physically and sexually assaulted me during high school in the early 1980s. Kavanaugh tried to disrobe me, she wrote. With Kavanaugh's hand over my mouth, I feared he may inadvertently kill me, she said, noting he was highly intoxicated. After a few attempts to get away, I was able to take this opportunity to get up and run across to a hallway bathroom. I locked the bathroom door behind me. That's what Dr. Ford says. Should she testify on Monday? Should there first be an FBI investigation? Ford says that Kavanaugh had a friend in the room. Should that friend also be required to testify? What do you think of Judge Kavanaugh's denial that this happened? Should Ford's charges be ignored altogether? If Kavanaugh were to acknowledge the attack and apologize, would that make the issue go away? Should the vote on Kavanaugh's confirmation go ahead next week? What do you think? 813-239-9663. And we're going to try to give a preference to women. And let's go to Tina in Tampa. Tina, you're on.
Hey,
what do you think?
Rob.
Hi.
Absolutely, I think the FBI should investigate. If for this reason, most of the things that she described that happened to her during this assault are felonies with no statute of limitations. So he could be charged with a crime under Maryland law. And probably, like, for example, this is from an article I'm reading. What she described is attempted sexual assault with the aid of another person in Maryland that accounts as attempted first degree rape. Also breathing, restricting her breathing could qualify as a first-degree assault. Both are felonies with no statute of limitations in Maryland. And probably that is the case in some other states as well. So if you really want to get, you know, technical about it, he could possibly be charged with a crime. I'm not saying that would happen, but I think that absolutely the FBI needs to investigate and possibly some authorities in the state of Maryland.
Should the Senate delay the confirmation vote?
What are they in such a rush about? I mean, this is someone who they're considering for the highest court in the land, which is a lifetime appointment. Whoever they choose, whoever gets nominated and approved, is going to be there for a lifetime. What is it? What is another couple weeks or even a couple months? What does that matter for someone who's going to be appointed to the highest court in the land under, you know, allegations of, you know, a sexual assault where he could be charged? I mean, I certainly, you know, care enough about that. I mean, and I think it's really unfortunate that she comes forward, and this is important information. I mean, everybody should know, the entire nation, no matter what you feel about, you know, Kavanaugh. And she's coming forward, and now she's getting so much grief. And to tell her things like, I read that now they want her to put in writing what she's going to say in advance of the hearing. That's just pressure to intimidate her. I mean, do they want the truth? Do they just want to browbeat her into just, you know, going away, which is what it sounds like they want to do? And I think that's such a mistake. For this position and that guy.
And Tina, just to clarify, were you reading from a Washington Post op-ed?
Washington Post.
Okay. Who wrote that op-ed?
It's a column in the Post that appeared today, quoting. It was someone who worked as Deputy Attorney General for Maryland.
Okay. All right, Tina. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks. And again, our phone number 813-239-9663. We've got one open line. You're listening to WMNF.org. That's where you can listen online anywhere around the world. And this is 88.5 FM. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for tuning into Radio Activity. Let's go to Kaylee, who's in Zephyr Hills. Hi, Kaylee. What do you think of the Kavanaugh controversy?
Rob. Hi. Well, I just want to say, and I'm not browbeating her, but to the caller who said, let sleeping dogs lie, she quite obviously has not been a victim of sexual assault. I can tell you that I really appreciate all the comments the previous caller just made. I agree with her 100%. This is a Supreme Court justice we're talking about. This isn't, you know, we're electing him for some mosquito control officer locally. This is a Supreme Court justice appointment. I think the only reason that they're rushing it is because they want to push him through, plain and simple. And I can tell you this woman was very, very brave to come forward in this way. I was sexually assaulted by my family doctor when I was a teenager. And I can tell you this does not go away in a woman's psyche. It has affected every relationship I've been in. It has, you know, caused PTSD, depression. She deserves to be heard. And you probably clarified it earlier. I caught the show about halfway, but I was reading an NBC News blurb just beforehand that said, no, they don't have to let her testify. I strongly suggest that they do, but who knows what they're going to do. You know, for this woman's well-being, I think it's up to her. She never should be forced to testify. That is, you know, a way to re-traumatize a woman who has, by the sounds of it, been through hell.
You know, I think that's what men don't get. I think if men haven't been sexually abused or traumatized, they don't get the kind of pressure that Dr. Ford is under.
No, they don't. They don't. And, you know, the only people that I have found who can empathize with me, and some don't, they say, oh, PTSD is only for veterans. You're full of it, you know. But I do have a couple of close friends who are veterans, and they get it. They get that I have flashbacks. They get that this doesn't completely go away. They get that you can lead a normal and even wonderful life, but something can come up and bam, you know, you're back there again.
And Kaylee, I didn't mean to cut you off, but you've struggled with this since you were a teen. Could you give us an idea of the kinds of things that you've tried to help you get through this? How you've tried to, you know, rid yourself of the trauma? Like,
I have done screaming therapy. I've done talk therapy. I do take an antidepressant. If I don't, then within hours, I can be plunged into a dark place. I meditate. That has helped a lot. I belong to a 12-step program, and quite honestly, that is, I believe, helped me almost as much as anything. But I also, there was an excellent book back in the 80s by Judith Herman. It's called Trauma and Recovery. Amazing researcher, incredibly well-sourced. And I learned that I was not crazy when I read this book, that these things were done to me. And she had a section about how you tell false memories from real memories. I don't know if you remember, but there was a period of time that women were being accused of making these things up.
Yeah.
And it happened to be when I was in early recovery from this. I didn't really deal with it until my 30s. I had literally repressed a lot of these things. And, you know, this woman's account, I have done a lot of research on false memories and the characteristics versus authentic memories of rape and sexual assault, and she sounds every bit authentic to me.
Well, Kaylee, I know this call, it took a lot of courage to make the call, and thank you so much. I think it helps a lot of people understand.
You're very welcome, Rob.
Thanks, Kaylee. Thank you.
Gotcha.
All right. Great
bye-bye.
To hear from you. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM, and we're talking about the Kavanaugh nomination, asking, should Christine Blasey Ford testify on Monday? Should there be an FBI investigation first? Ford says Kavanaugh's friend was in the room that night when they were all in high school. Should that friend be required to testify if Ms. Ford is required to testify? What do you think of Kavanaugh's denial? Should Ford's charges be ignored altogether? If Kavanaugh were to acknowledge the attack and apologize, would that make the issue go away? Should the vote on Kavanaugh's confirmation go ahead next week? What do you think? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Patty in Bel Air. Patty, you're on. What would you like to say?
Well, I just I want to address the, you know, kind of one of the underlying issues that's not really spoken very often about, the issue of sexual assault, and when women bring it up, you know, decades later. One of the things that happens is that there's so much shame attached, and it's almost debilitating. And I've never been raped, but I have been sexually assaulted. And it's I don't know, you know, the difference between being actually physically having it, you know, go through that and go through what I went through, but it's got to be close to the same. I think it's the idea that somehow you provoked that, and so in my experience, women don't talk about it even with each other. It's just not something that we go to. It's just so shameful.
I get the idea that these senators think that it's an easy thing for Dr. Ford to come forward and sit in that room full with all the TV cameras on, all the senators there, the whole nation listening and watching to her testimony. I think the Republican senators think, oh, that's a snap. She can do that in a heartbeat.
Well, I think that, as usual, it's, you know, this sort of thing, it, you know, there's been a lot of this talk lately, obviously. It's it can be really easily dismissed as, you know, why didn't they bring it up earlier? Of course it's political. Of course it's for some kind of gain. It's for money. It's for this. It's for that. But the thing is that women don't want to bring it up unless they have to. Do you know what I mean? It's because it is so shameful. It's not something that is that easily, readily thrown around. And that really, 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 really rare case where a woman maybe did lie about it does not negate the thousands and thousands that have really experienced it. And I think that the conversation needs to be more about that. Now, should she go ahead and should she go in that room on Monday? I think ultimately that's her choice. I would, but then I see myself as this very strong person, and I would, you know, want to stand up to these guys. But it's what she can afford to do for herself. The bigger picture is that I agree with the woman who spoke earlier that this is a Supreme Court justice, and this isn't just some, you know, lower. I mean, this is for life, yeah. You know, and this is really important.
It really
so
is.
So maybe she needs to take one for the team, kind of, just to, yeah. You know, use a stupid cliche.
Patty, I'm so sorry we're out of time, but thank you so much for calling.
Thank
I
you.
Wish we had more time.
Okay.
Thanks. And thanks to all the women who courageously shared their stories today here on WMNF. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up, 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. We'll play your comments tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Now stay tuned for the Surly Fem-